Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being here with us on this Friday after Thanksgiving, sometimes called Black Friday. We're so happy to have you here with us. We're not actually in the studio.
It is the day on which you are dispensed from abstinence in the United States.
Wait, you're dispensed from
abstinence from meat.
Oh, in the United States, they
traditionally, and even now, from Friday after Thanksgiving, because people had all that leftover turkey.
Yeah, you can't just
even in the 50s.
A lot of people think the leftovers are better than the meal.
My wife thinks that.
I think turkey is overrated, but in any case.
Oh, gosh. Father Hugh, I keep finding reasons I love you. All right, I'm going to offend like 3/4 of our listeners right now, but I would much prefer to have roast beef on Thanksgiving.
Oh, see, who wouldn't?
My dad's a ham guy. He likes the Thanksgiving ham.
Yeah, but it's a good country ham, sure.
Yeah, right. But
we always had baked oysters and country ham and turkey.
My son Nicholas
insists. What planet did you grow up on?
Pardon?
Is that the Carolinas?
That's a North Carolina thing. Okay. You have an oyster casserole and you have a nice country ham and then you have the
My son
too.
Nicholas
and you only eat the dark meat.
Insists that he has solved the turkey problem.
Okay,
and he's a chef.
I wasn't aware that there's a turkey problem.
Well, besides how it tastes, but
it was Ben Franklin's idea to begin with, anyway.
But in any case, no. Nicholas insists he has been able to prepare a turkey that you would want to eat.
All right. Well, he can come over to my house next. He can come over to my house for Christmas.
He's not shared that with me.
Oh. No. All right. We're not going to give out the phone number this hour because we're not going to take calls. And we're not going to take calls because it's the day after Thanksgiving and you probably don't want to dial the phone. And even if you did dial the phone, we're not here. We pre-recorded this before Thanksgiving. So if anything shocking has happened between now and then, we don't know about it.
But by the way, next Friday, you have to fast.
The Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yes. Friday week. Yes.
Yeah.
It's not fast. Abstain.
Right.
But not Friday after Thanksgiving.
Today.
Friday after the Friday.
Yeah. Certainly.
Friday week.
Right. You're
abstaining.
Back to it. Uh-huh.
Abstaining.
Okay. Yeah. And abstaining from meat is, okay, that is a very good thing for us, but it's a really good thing for kind of making a witness that I'm Catholic because not that many people do it anymore.
Yes.
Well, interestingly, the bishops of England, who are not noted for their particular positions, but they restored the law of abstinence as the only option for Friday abstinence for the UK because they said that there's nothing that marks Catholics from anybody else.
Yeah, that's a good
point. And so they restored it.
This is a beautiful essay by Father Feeney called Fish on Fridays. And he and his argument is that that one of the great benefits of this, aside from the spiritual benefits of abstaining, is that it unites Catholics.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, right. A lot of these things we've lost, I think, in the kind of globalizing and reforming years that we've had over the last century or so. These common things that we've lost that we used to have.
Well, there's kind of an abstract clerical quality to the reform, quote unquote, of these disciplines. Because what the Holy See forgot in all this is that apart from there being penances – and they're often not because fish is just as good as meat for certain people.
It's actually more expensive.
Right. It's more expensive and you could have lobster, you know, the OC joke.
What a horrible penance.
But apart from that, it's the cultural and human bond of having certain observances that are important for people. And that's another issue from penance, but there it is.
I have to say I've heard this too about the barrenness of modern churches that – the people who are most affected by that are often not the elite, highly educated Catholics, but the common, everyday, working class man or woman and their kids, because those are points of contact with the faith that are so valuable. And if you're, you know, a working class person, you don't have time to, you know, I don't know, be with the monks praying the office and all that stuff. So a beautiful church with lots of
art
in it is a really good thing.
I remember having a conversation with my beloved maternal grandmother, and she was very Protestant, and she gave me the line of how she'd been to beautiful churches in Quebec and in Mexico, and the people, this was back in like the 40s, when Quebec was full of Catholic children and big families. And
right, before the disaster
of
the 60s.
Exactly, right. And she said, well, I just saw these beautiful churches everywhere, but all these poor, miserable people. And I thought, why is this? And I was a little too bright for my britches. And so I told her, but it was my guardian angel that helped, because she actually agreed with me. She actually said, yeah, you got the point. I said, those churches are available to everyone.
Yeah, right.
The poor and the rich. And right. if you go to them at any given day of the week, the people that are there are the poor.
Yeah.
And if you look at your hometown, the towns my parents grew up in, the Protestant churches are very stark and severe and, you know, plain.
Right.
But all the beauty, the paintings, the nice furniture, the candelabra, the wallpaper, the Persian rugs,
yeah.
and everything, which they're in the houses of the rich.
Right.
And yeah. and so the rich get to look at all these nice things, and the poor get nothing.
Right.
And so I said, you know, that's the difference.
Right.
And she said, well, perhaps you have a point.
yeah. And well, I said, the rich are all eating oysters, too, for Easter.
No, no, I mean, everybody eats oysters. Oh. oysters. Sorry. Those things grow without – you barely need to – I mean, everybody eats oysters.
this is important to you, Chris, about church architecture, what it looks like to walk into a church. I've heard you talk about this.
Sure. Well, either it directs our attention towards the divine, or it makes us think of, lunch in the school cafeteria.
Yeah. Those are the two choices.
Well, and actually there are churches that I'm certain were deliberately designed to be ugly.
Yeah, by Satan. If you look at the underground basilica at Lourdes, look at the horrible basilica in San Giovanni Rotondo for Padre Pio.
Right.
Look at the absolutely dreadful basilica in Fatima.
How about Los Angeles?
Wait. We're not going to go there.
Too late.
And then look at the well, you can go there, but I'm not going to go there. And look at the hideous basilica in Guadalupe, and ask yourself, how is it that the most visited shrines in Christendom
turned out to be ugly?
Unbelievably ugly. The new shrines. There is a conspiracy of ugliness there. That it has to be.
Right.
They couldn't get to Rome. They couldn't wreck the Italian Renaissance. They couldn't wreck. Yeah. But boy, they wrecked. But the simple faithful, all they want is the image of Our Lady the Tilma. They don't care if the church is like. Well, they care, but I mean, they'll go anyway. They'll go to Padre Pio's grave.
But whether
they'll
we go care
to
or not.
But I mean, somebody with an evil intention deliberately encouraged this horrible,
yes.
brutal. Art.
Yes.
Amen, brother.
And I'm saying that, and if you want to get upset with me, somebody out there in Radio Land, but it's really, really true.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's no, and if you go to the Eastern churches, you know, and they never build ugly churches.
Yeah.
They may build simple churches that are, you know, but they don't build ugly churches.
Well, I was talking about modern music with the composer Frank LaRocca, and he kind of said it's an intellectual exercise, and it's a rebellion against the beauty of earlier music, as if to say, well, we don't need beauty. All we need is this great intellectual 12-tone thing we're doing. I think that's true of modern architecture as well.
So I think of if you're in an Eastern European country now, it's not so much now. Father and I were in Prague in June, and I noticed a considerable difference from the last time I was there, which was perhaps almost 20 years ago. Nonetheless, when you're coming into Prague from the airport, the suburbs are surrounded by these Soviet-style giant apartment buildings, now, which since have been painted. But the first time I came through there, it was immediately my conclusion that these buildings had been designed to dishearten the people who live inside them.
And
so here's an example. They're the most vile sort of square concrete, and then they've got and then all banded with iron. And so that now the rust is streaking down from the casement. And in fact, I believe that the designer designed these things to grow uglier over time. So, I offer that as an example. Now, some of these have been painted with quite bright colors and whatnot, but still, you're confining tons of people in a small space in what is an ugly building. And I think the purpose of this thing is to kind of just to depress the human soul.
And in the light of that, our Republican developers in Orange and San Diego counties had a better idea, because they do try to make new developments look halfway pretty.
I think there is a I think
yes,
since the 80s or certainly since the, so here's another example, Cy. If you go to Georgetown University,
right,
which has this beautiful neo-Gothic academic quadrangle, at the south end of it, at the river, the Potomac River end of it, you've got this Soviet style library. Yeah. And there's no
Boston College has the same thing.
There's no other conclusion that you can possibly have other than the man who put there was really just, thumbing his nose,
right,
if you will,
right,
or worse.
That's hatred.
At the rest of that academic quadrangle.
An example of something a little happier in that regard is the Dominican Library at Catholic University.
Yes, that
Dominican House of Studies across. They expanded and rebuilt their library.
I have to look this up.
And what they did is at that point they did it in the '90s or the '00s or whenever, but they repeated the Gothic architecture of the Dominican house,
mm-hmm,
and it's beautiful and very lightsome. They have windows and everything. And I thought, thank God they did this when they did it, because if they'd done it in the '70s, there would be some really hideous, ugly building next to theirs. I mean, really and truly.
Well, it's the international style, the Chicago style.
And Bauhaus,
even in Chicago,
right,
you can see these beautiful Art Deco buildings from the gangster era. And then all of a sudden in the 1960s and 70s, it's death.
Gangsters
it's
had taste.
Glass and steel and, you know. Mies, the great Chicago architect, said he wanted to celebrate glass and steel. There's nothing to celebrate in glass and steel. You celebrate humanity or God or beauty or something. But Cy,
there are architectural achievements even underway right now to celebrate, not least of which the beautiful abbey that Father Hugh's confreres are building in Orange. Those of you listening who have not seen it, go to stmichaelsabbey.com or I don't know whatever your site is there.
Yeah,
and see and apparently, Cy, they have a drone. Someone donated a drone.
There might be more than one.
Someone donated a drone to St. Michael's Abbey. So there are daily pictures of the progress, and the crypt is poured, and now the floor over the crypt.
I'm glad you have a drone, Father.
Yeah. So
several, actually.
Well, Father,
I know.
I was on the phone today with Father Pascal, who manages all the accounts up there at St. Michael's, and he was telling me, oh, follow me on my Facebook page, and you can see regular pictures. So listeners out there in Catholic Answers Live land, friend Father Pascal on Facebook, and you can see daily pictures from the drone that apparently one of your confreres named Father Joseph.
Well, Joseph,
I'm sort of scandalized that a priest actually knows how to operate a drone. That kind of troubles me a little bit. But
no, he's the tech worthy guy.
Well, that scandalizes me too. Tech.
Well, you always have somebody. We have like 90 confreres. Someone's got to do the stuff,
right? But that is beautiful, and especially our listeners, our friends in Southern California, need to go up and take a visit to that place.
Do you have electricity at the Abbey too? Because that bothers me when monks have electricity.
Yeah, me too.
Well, all we do is we have to pump. We have to pump pedals in our rooms, and we have to go in and we've pumped about 20 times, and the lights come on.
They do have bees, don't you? You have bees, don't you?
We have from time to time. Now I think we have them again. Yeah.
I have to say, we have to go to a break, and we'll go to a break now. But I will say this: postmodern architecture is not like postmodern literature. They've re-embraced beauty in a lot of architecture, and you see more beautiful. Even secular buildings are getting more beautiful.
Yeah,
so thank God for that.
That's what I was pointing out with the Dominican library. There, it's fantastic.
But I do want to talk with you. We promised at the end of the last hour we would. I want to talk to you about this article in the Atlantic magazine and about. The loss of humanity and even the loss of our healthy sexuality. It seems to be evaporating. We'll do that right after this break on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
It's the start of a new day for Morning Catholic Radio.
Isn't it the case that when you're stirring food in a pot, it burns less, like, because it's not just sitting there?
What about your forearms? You get some nice buff forearms when you're doing that stirring.
Yeah, that's true.
I can totally get this for you, Gloria. You don't need any help stirring the pot.
Oh. You know, you all make it so easy for me.
Morning Glory, Catholic from the start. Weekday mornings, 7 Eastern on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio by Father Hugh Barber, who I did not introduce this hour. I apologize for that. Father is our chaplain here and an Orbertine priest, and also our president, Chris Check.
Hey, Cy.
The father of four sons, the husband of Jackie, who's very, very funny.
She is, isn't she
hilarious?
We should have her on sometime.
I think that'd be a great idea.
She's absolutely. She could be like the. She could answer questions.
Of course, she could.
We could have a totally
about marriage.
Yeah. Now, how do you pronounce marriage, Father?
Well, in my marriage. Previous life as an Anglican, it was marriage.
Marriage. Okay, so speaking of marriage and the Well, frankly, I mean, it's going to be a little bit graphic this next segment. So if you have little tiny babies, just in case, if you have little kids in there, well, it might be
PG-13.
Let's see, it's possible that it would be maybe this. If you have a 6-year-old, you should go to VeggieTales now or Baby Shark or something like that.
Just no VeggieTales. Just how about like Mother Goose?
Okay, fine. Yeah,
we just had the Mother Goose Parade in El Cajon, the annual one.
Yeah. Wait, when was it? Year. I missed it.
Shut off the screen, open a book.
It was yesterday. I think they have an annual Mother Goose Parade
in El Cajon. In El Cajon, that is true.
And
they've been
doing
it for the last 100 years.
Nobody called me to tell me.
They've been doing
none
that
of you guys
for decades.
Called me to tell me. Yeah. I would go to the Mother Goose Parade. Yeah. They used to televise it when I was a kid. They televise it in local television. Did they televise it this
year? Here?
Yeah, they'd local on local.
I don't know if they do or
San
not.
San Diego TV, they would. Okay, so Atlantic Magazine has an article on its cover, and the article is "The Sex Recession." It starts with several paragraphs, which together are absolute nonsense.
Is this written
at the
because
beginning.
President Trump is the president?
It is not. Okay. Apparently,
it's not that kind of recession.
What's happening is that people are all kinds
stormy
of
stormy age. We have it.
All kinds of. Sexual intercourse are on the decline, meaning by all kinds, I mean those that are within the sacrament or not even the sacrament, but within marriage and without. And you might say, well, that is great news to hear that, you know, people are fornicating less, which is certainly – I know that's a fancy word.
It's very good.
But sometimes – I'll put it this way. Sometimes we always, I guess, temptation is to the perversion of a good. Right? And so even it seems that people – the good of sex is provides a tremendous temptation to people. It seems to be providing less of a temptation, which means the good itself is lacking as well as the evil. See what I'm saying?
Well, it's easy to analyze if you look at it from St. Thomas's point of view, and we have a hard time talking about it because there's not the language doesn't exist to talk about it, but we have to come up with something. St. Thomas, you know, that with all the virtues, there's the virtue itself, like chastity, which is the mean. And for us, the virtue of chastity is relations with a lawful spouse of the opposite sex within marriage without prohibiting procreation. Anything beyond that in the direction is a sin of lust by way of excess. But St. Thomas says there is the possibility of a sin by way of defect, that is, of a lack of desire. But he says that is so uncommon that there's no name for it. Because he was a like robust medieval man, so he didn't believe that there were people.
Apparently,
it's
called late modernity.
Right. And so what we have now is a weird combination of excess of lust by way of media production. And yet then a lack of desire for actual real human contact.
It's a lack of desire for the natural.
For the natural.
What a great point.
Yeah. And that's if St. Thomas says, for example, if a man should have no desire for his wife or for a woman, that would be a defect in chastity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just like, that's what he says. It's a defect.
Yeah.
And this, that's, but he says there's no word for it because he was writing in the 13th
century.
Well,
we were made to reproduce. There was no, and, you know,
right.
Well,
back then they didn't have this
problem. Well, there are two things at work in the present age that were not so much, if at all, in St. Thomas's. And one, of course, is the contraceptive pill or the hormonal contraceptive. And I would recommend to our readers a book by a Canadian sociologist named Lionel Tiger. He's not a Catholic. It's called The End of Males. But one of the things that he pointed out was that the pill was going to fundamentally upset all aspects of the male-female relationship. So it implied in intercourse is, of course, the immediate mutual self-giving. But also implied in there is the self-giving of the broader marriage, the provision by the father, the child rearing by the mother, and the love necessary for all of these things. So self-giving, really a better word is love, because that is what love is, and our Lord being, you know, the consummate example. Yeah. So once that relationship of self-giving is upset, then we're going to find ourselves naturally – or not naturally, I should say, but we should expect to find ourselves increasingly more perversely or more perverse
– confusedly.
Yeah, confusedly, yeah, down this road. And then the other thing I would say – argue that is at work here that was not so much in St. Thomas is just tech and the rise of increasingly I'm at a loss for the
– Verisimilitudinous?
Whatever it is, or just simply distracting.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
things, screens. And so even, for example, you could find a married couple where the husband or the wife just as Jason Isbell, the country western singer or Americana singer says, you know, I struggle not to live inside my screen or not to live inside my phone.
And I think this is a very important point is that modern culture with media culture, it over dramatizes and over refines the experience and expectation of sexual relations.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that it's overdramatic. A normal old married couple, they get it. It's like everything else in life. Sometimes it's very, very nice, you know, and the rockets go off and the earth moves and everything. Other times, you know, it's just life, you know, and it's a human relationship. It's like dinner every night together. You know, it's just one of those human needs that has to be met, but also is related to their relationship and their commitments. And we have a culture that just overemphasizes the refinements of this experience. And then that gets people so that they become testy and irritable if it's not according to what they've been looking at their little porn screen. And they become awful.
So I think Father has hit the expression here. To be sure, there is an increasing or a decreasing interest in fornication. It's almost like, you know, could we bring back fornication, right? You know, of course, I'm not advocating for that.
No, please.
Yeah, no, but
my boss has some amazing turns of phrase. But anyway, yeah,
at least that natural desire, that natural affection. But now these things are unnatural desires, and at bottom, it's a lack of human relationship.
But it's strange because you say bring back fornication, like, but the fact is,
of course, you know, I'm being
no, I know, I understand that what you're saying, but the fact is, all of the evils of fornication are present in these pornographic, like, person who's really truly relating to pornography. You know, that's their primary relationship is pornography.
Except what the data is showing now, Cy, apparently, is that men are
they lose their interest.
Yeah, because of their interest in pornography.
And women start going to plastic surgeons to make themselves look like porn stars. And I won't go into any detail, but let's just say
please don't go into any serious, detail. I don't need to know.
I know, but this is a very serious problem, and it wounds souls immensely.
So tech and the pill have just been this diabolical cocktail to destroy – human relationships before,
right,
before and after marriage.
So it'd be fair to say that the sexual revolution is, first of all, a technological revolution followed by a moral revolution because of the new possibilities provided by that technology.
Right. And also forgetting that the object of technology is to attain the end of whatever you're doing. Yeah. And once you lose sight of the end, then you'd get lost in details.
Yeah.
And it becomes perverse.
Yes.
The end of marital relations is the procreation of children. Sorry, that's the way it is. You know, and
right,
whether you do it badly or well, it's for procreation of children.
Yeah.
And then the rest is detail. Maybe interesting, but it's not.
Well, that separation of sex and procreation, it's
going to separate men and women.
Yeah, but there won't be that many men and women left either if we keep on the way we're going. We'll talk about that when we come back on the other side.
Well, they get to decide.
I guess so. Catholic Answers Live panel discussion today. We're talking about this new article in the Atlantic magazine on the decrease in the amount of sex people are having with other people.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
As Catholics, we hear expressions like dogma, doctrine, deposit of faith, and of course, magisterium. And adding to the confusion, we have the ordinary magisterium and the extraordinary magisterium. So what if you were looking for one book written for the layman that explained what all these terms mean and how they interact in the lives of the Church and her faithful? The fact is, no such book existed until now. Brand new from Catholic Answers Press is Jimmy Akin's latest book, Teaching with Authority. Teaching with Authority is not about specific church teachings, it's about church teaching itself. A unique and long overdue resource for Catholics as well as those inquiring about the faith, Teaching with Authority will help deepen your understanding of what the church teaches by showing you how, why, and where she does. Get your copy of Teaching with Authority today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The world is changing. The days of picking up a paperback book or popping a DVD or compact disc in the player have given way to the digital age. The good news is that the shop at Catholic.com has joined the digital revolution. Check out the new digital platform at shop.catholic.com, where all of our DVDs, books, and audio products are now available in digital form for you to purchase and download at your convenience, anywhere you go. For that matter, anywhere in the world. We've got hundreds of offerings, so visit shop.catholic.com today and check out our selection. That's shop.catholic.com.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. Do you have questions about the Catholic faith? Listen for the best of Called to Communion on Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern and live on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Called to Communion on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the Catholic Answers Live Friday panel show. Our panel today, our panel members today are our president, Chris Check, and our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber. And again, a little a warning. We're not trying to make an R-rated show, but if there's little ears in the vicinity, you might want to put something else on for them, or maybe put headphones on or something like that. Because we're talking about an article in the Atlantic magazine. It's called The Sex Recession, and it's actually very serious because it seems to me that this is a perfectly natural outcome for the sexual revolution, and one that the people who have been proponents of the sexual revolution have just refused to see that there would be consequences, and that among the consequences would be a destruction of an ability to be intimate with one another, and even a desire to be intimate with one another as real human beings.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt about it.
That's a question for you, Chris Check.
Well.
I wasn't saying that to scold you, Father. I was saying that because I need to get Chris talking. Father acts like I scolded him.
I want to go to.
I'll just cry here.
I want to go to solutions.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Turn off the screens.
But wait, can I just ask, is there not some point at which a society says, we are behaving indecently, at least, at the very least, we should make it so that children are not exposed to porn? I mean, it seems to me we're so casual about the fact that we're just – that you know what? That's just the way the internet is. You can't do anything about it. Well, why can't you do anything about it? I mean,
you can.
You can. Yeah. If you wanted to, you could do something about it, but it would cut into profits.
I actually don't think that they want children not to be exposed to these things. I think they deliberately do. Okay. A Hollywood producer might say, oh, no, of course not. I don't want 14-year-olds or 12-year-olds to see pornographic material. But for goodness sakes, go to any PG-13 movie, and just because body parts aren't exposed doesn't mean there is not a tone,
yeah,
or a deliberately represented scene of sexual sin.
And
in a way that is going to be alluring and attractive, or you don't have to go to a movie on TV. Or, for example, sexual deviance in the forms of homosexuality. Every sitcom now has to have the jolly, clever, sensitive homosexual character.
No.
So. So you might have a Hollywood producer or a director say, oh, no, of course we don't want children to see pornography. But in fact, they really do.
Yeah. And there's a cumulative effect to this mass culture, pop culture, which is I guess there's two things about it. One of them is that there's a constant message being communicated about sex that. No big deal. It's no big deal. It's no big deal. Just whatever. Whenever it's recreation. And the second thing is,
it's the biggest thing ever.
Yeah. It's the most important thing in your life.
Right,
and out loud, you should be responsible with it. But no, our society is irresponsible with it. But the second part is, pop culture, because it is pop culture, is relentlessly shallow. It cannot have a reflective thought. Reflection is the death of pop culture. So all these pop culture outlets, whether it's Entertainment Tonight or CBS News or whatever, they are not going to reflect at a deeper level, because once you start reflecting at a deeper level, people will start rejecting pop culture and stop buying your products and stop, you know, satisfying your advertisers. So it has to be relentlessly shallow about these things.
Yeah. And relentlessly or increasingly more and more perverse.
Yeah, because – well, that's the way we are though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's important to realize though that this stuff has been developing for a long time now. And like if you go back to T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland,
right,
he foresaw the pornographic mechanistic attitude towards sex that would be predominant in our culture. And then we look back, or certain people of a certain age look back with nostalgia on these wholesome movies that they used to have.
Yeah.
But actually, they were all moving in that direction.
They were, right.
Little by little.
Sure.
You know, it's just like that. That's why the church was vigilant, very vigilant for a good long while, and then gave up the fight.
It's funny you bring this up, Father. Jackie and I just bought a new car, and we got 3 months of satellite radio with the thing. And I've been listening to the old-timey radio show. I think it's called Radio Classics or something like that. And I am frankly alarmed at the level of innuendo that was in place in the middle of the 40s and into the late 40s and early 50s in radio drama. It's extraordinary.
Right.
Father is exactly right. This has been underway for a very long time.
And that's why a lot of Catholics, conservative ones, will say, well, that was healthy. Those were healthy impulses. And what we have now are all these sick gays and blah, blah, blah. And you go, no,
that's
sorry,
not
buddy.
Healthy. Yeah.
Sorry, the what you're talking about was not healthy. And they like to contrast themselves with the extremes that they now meet, but they don't realize that they were always enthralled by inappropriate things that were not decent for Christians to watch or
and
listen to.
Even in the age of the motion picture code, and my goodness, wouldn't we like to go back to that, if for no other reason than that's when good films were being made because directors were constrained. But nonetheless, any kind of effort for some kind of, innuendo a director would fit in there, yeah, just to get it through the code. Yeah.
Maybe as with everything in this modern world, you know, whether it's the waiting in lines that we do or the commercialization of things, this pornographizing. Did I make that up? Pornographizing? Is that an invented word? Of culture, it actually provides an opportunity for the shock of the gospel. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yes. It does. It does. The difficulty is preparing that. Well, as the philosophers like to say, the message depends on the mode of the receiver. So if someone is dead or nearly dead to that message. Yeah. Now, when you say shock, it's going to sound so opposed to the life I'm living right now.
Yeah.
But am I capable? Am I prepared? Is there sufficient soil tilled in order for that message to land? You know, not by the side of the road.
Right. But I guess what I'm thinking is that the fullness of what the Catholic Church proposes is so. Just for an example, now we have social science, and I'm always suspect of social science. I mean, I think most of it is baloney, frankly, but that's my prejudice, perhaps. But there is good, solid social science increasingly that, and I believe the Atlantic magazine last month had this article: the fewer sexual partners you have before marriage, the more likely you are to be happy in marriage.
Sure. Oh, surprise, surprise.
I know. And it's like, that's what Jesus was teaching. Like, that's what the prophets would teach. That's so old, that knowledge. And yet it's becoming new knowledge now. It's like, that is brand new to a lot of people.
Yeah.
The rediscovery of basic truths about human nature.
Yeah, that's good.
We're going on three generations now. And before I came to Catholic Answers, I worked for an organization in Illinois called the Rockford Institute. And one of the things we did was just aggregate this data on what all the pathologies associated with family breakdown. So, so children of divorce, right?
Yeah.
You're going to see more suicide ideation. You're going to see earlier drug use, earlier rates of teenage fornication, depression, almost every kind of social medical pathology. Often, ear infections, for example, things like this are associated with some kind or another of family breakdown, whether it's illegitimacy, and I know that's not a popular word to use nowadays, or divorce. So it's true, yeah. So social science is confirming what you say the gospel, and I agree with you, but frankly, what people even knew before.
Oh, yes, that's right, right. Like in ancient Greek, we wouldn't have been shocked by that at all. Like they would have said, well, yeah, that's what. But we have Homer, you know, we're not dumb, you know, or something like that. Yeah. Or some things are basically obvious. But maybe as a matter of fact, it's the kind of idea that we had in the modern world that we had demystified sex. Like, well, we've taken all the, you know, we have science and we have Freud and we have blah, 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 blah. But ancient people, even pagans knew, no, there is a great mystery afoot here and you better be careful.
Well, and they understood that it was associated with procreation, and they wanted their lines to continue. This is a difference between that we tend to describe people nowadays who are behaving immorally as pagans, when in fact pagans wanted children.
Yeah,
they wanted grandchildren.
Much higher standard.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. A pagan, you think of the noble pagan is a very noble creature.
They regarded procreation as a result of a sacred bond.
Right.
It was something holy,
yeah,
even for the pagans.
Because it is something holy, and they hadn't lost their
sensitivity. That's why the social disapproval of misbehavior in this regard was so strong, because it was something sacred.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right.
It wasn't just
to deny the many perversions of the ancient world. I mean,
of course not. Those exist all the time anyway.
Sure.
Right. But it is to say there is something that people, when they are not systematically disabused of it, know about sex, which is that this is very, very important. It's only when you've been propagandized for generation after generation that, no, this is just recreation, that you lose that natural sense of
the importance. And that's where we are with all these kids sexting each other on their phones and just treating it like it's a lark.
They know, but, although I wonder, Father, they still know it's important even though they may not be able to articulate why or even necessarily in their hearts know why. They still have some kind of natural human sense that this is a fundamental thing in human life.
Yeah, because of course it grabs their imagination and their memory and attention, so it must be important.
Yeah,
and you also see that there are lots of young Catholics, and we have many of them here at Catholic Answers, but we see them wherever we go, who get it. They, and I think Paul VI is to be thanked for that, but and also Pope John Paul II to a great degree, because he really wanted people to find their happiness in marriage. he really believed in that. And it seems like young people are getting it again, maybe.
Some are.
Some are, yeah.
Some are, but among millennials, there's a delay in marriage now. Right.
Yeah. Mike, I used to shock my children when I would say it's okay to marry young, and they'd be like every teacher ever has told, no, you know, do all this stuff and get your, and I'd say, no, that's baloney.
There's never going to be enough money.
That's because you're rich, of course. So
there's never going to be enough education.
All those
reasons people are delaying marriage, they're dumb.
Right.
They're dumb.
They're dumb reasons. Yeah. And look at our, I mean, all of us, we all admire Nick.
Who's got another baby on the way.
He's got a second child on the way.
Nick Chamberlain.
Married at the ripe old age of, how old were you when you got married? 25? 24. 24 is a normal age to get married.
I was 25.
As a matter of fact, do you know that? See, I was 30 when I got married. Let's not talk about me. Look, there's also a chart that you can draw, or an arc you can draw that says, what is the most likely age to get married at in order to have a lasting marriage? And it goes up from, say, 18 to 25. And then about 27, it starts to come down.
Interesting.
Isn't that – like there is a natural age at which – and we're putting that off longer and longer and longer and longer.
Well, my parents, they married – my father was 21. My mother was 22. And that was not regarded as strange at the time.
No.
At all.
No, by no means.
My grandmother was
17. People married when they got out of high school, you know.
Yeah. She didn't get to finish high school. So – but sometimes – sometimes there were consequences that had to be dealt with too. That people just got married. That was like the noble thing to do. If you have given in to temptation and now there's a child on the way, you get married.
Yeah, no, we're in the middle.
That's not always a good idea. I'm not saying, Father.
We are well into a retreat from marriage that's been going on now for about three generations, and I actually don't see an end in sight. I see an end in sight among certain groups, such as, like you describe, young people who work at Catholic Answers, or
Thomas Aquinas grads, kids that go to St. Michael's
Abbey
High School.
We'll start publishing on our website the available members of the staff.
We do have some available members. We should have them come in and
young people who go to the Latin Mass or something of this nature. But in the main, even among Catholics, there's a retreat from marriage.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, I didn't want to leave on bad news before we went to our break, but we have to take a break. We're not done with the hour, Chris. Don't worry. But
I have good news.
We have good news to follow, yes.
You have good news about marriage or about?
I have hope.
Okay. You're going to share some hope with us.
We, as Christians, we're commanded to have hope.
Yes.
Is that the word, Father? Commanded?
Commanded. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a virtue. You can be commanded to observe it.
Yep.
All right. I hope I will understand that all this by the time I get back. This is very highfalutin philosophy here. But I do want to invite you again, because we'd really like you to come with us on our Catholic Answers cruise. We're going to go February 10th to 17th. We're not bringing Father Hugh with us. We just thought, look, you got Tim Stables, you got Carlo Broussard. You bring Father Hugh, and that is over the top Catholic goodness.
Yeah, all work at the building would stop. We have to leave someone here.
We have to leave at least some brains here.
At the end of the month, we're going to have to give back any cabins that we haven't sold.
And I think that's why there's a deal right now.
There is.
Erica told me there's a deal. If you go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com and you sign up before Sunday, this Sunday night.
$150 off.
The code is thanks, right?
Yes.
Yes. Boy, Father, you're good. The code is thanks.
Promo code thanks.
CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
And you receive Chris Check $150 off per person.
I just need a job. Know. Don't do my job. I need a job. If you could be priest and the
No, but my successor is the chaplain, so I just want it to go well for
you. Father Chrysostom Baer, your successor, will be with us celebrate
sacraments each day. Very numerous family who has brothers and sisters who had tons of children also, so he's a good example of everything we're talking about.
That's a whole lot of fun to have big families like that. Chris Check will be there. I will be there. Chris is giving talks. Tim's giving talks. Father Chrysostom's giving talks. Carlo Broussard is giving talks. I'm carrying the bags. Go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com and sign up. CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
Thanks.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Happy day after Thanksgiving to you. I am joined in studio by the president of Catholic Answers, Chris Check, and by the chaplain here at Catholic Answers, Father Hugh Barber. And we are discussing, well, we've discussing a bit about the modern kind of, I guess it's a conundrum to many people. As a matter of fact, I thought that the Atlantic Magazine article opened bizarrely. Weird that they can't even see this. They say all these ways that you can get sex online. By the way, we're having graphic conversation. We continue with our graphic conversation. You have sex online. You have pornography. You have – and then it says – and it just goes on and on this list. And then it says, despite all of this, people are having less sex. I'm like, despite all of this? Yeah. It's because of all of
it's
this.
It's hilarious when the left is like at the cusp of a discovery.
They almost got there.
That everything that they believe in is a lie, and yet they can't – it's so obvious. Well,
yes, like, right. It's like the famous headline in the New York Times from years and years ago where it
men
said,
and women are different.
No, it said despite locking up hundreds of thousands, states find crime rates falling. And it was like, wait, that
that. Of course, there was a comma between hundreds of thousands and states because it's the New York Times.
Yeah. Okay.
So the headline but
they maybe don't know what the word despite means. The fact that human sexuality is an utter disaster is not despite the sexual revolution. It is because of the sexual revolution. So give me some hope, Chris Check. You said you wanted to give us hope.
I do. I want to underscore something that or repeat something that Father Hugh has said on the air, and I know that I have. Catholics need to be attentive to the reality that the devil especially hates the conjugal act because the fallen angels, the third of them, are being replaced by human persons in the kingdom of God. This tradition goes back to the fathers. And anything the devil can do to disrupt the relationship between men and women, to fundamentally upset that relationship, he's going to do. And he's really hitting out of the park right now. But like we said at the beginning, the pill and tech are at the heart of disrupting human relationships. I want to encourage people. You want some hope? Shut off the screens and write a love letter to someone. Write with a pen. And I'm holding up a pen right now, and a piece of paper. Write a love letter to your spouse. Those of you who aren't married, write a love letter to your to the young lady or man that you're courting right now. Get off the screen and write with a pen on a piece of paper. If everybody did this, it would really turn things around. So I totally. Yeah. No, you're looking at me like.
No, I'm not at all. I'm actually thinking I should do that. Like I was thinking about what I would write.
But. Writing a letter is an incarnational act.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That the writer
form to love.
Precisely. Well said. He incarnates. She incarnates himself in that letter. Yeah. So there, write a letter.
See, now I see a lot of hope in like, and maybe I see too much of this because of my job, but I see like these things like we had Curtis Martin in here the other day from the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. I feel like there's a ground level, like you think about Thomas Aquinas College what's the one up in New Hampshire? These wonderful
Thomas More
Christendom. College or Christendom then, College or Dallas or here in our own city we have John Paul the Great,
Steubenville,
and you think, well, every time they're turning out a student who's fully prepared in the faith and in love with Jesus and His Church, that's like sending an apostle out into the world.
And you know, Si, they're the high schools too. Father Hugh's confreres run the high school, St. Michael's preparatory school up in Orange, and then our friends in Fort Scott, Kansas, St. Martin's Academy, and then outside of Scranton, we've got Gregory the Great Academy and all these wonderful little schools where men are being made, which is really the crisis of our age. It's a crisis of manhood.
Well, traditionally, I think men have actually needed a good deal of help from women to become men. You know, like you need a woman to say, hey, you need to be responsible. If you we should be married if you want to be doing these things.
This goes back to the Lionel Tiger observation, which is that the pill upsets that relationship. Yeah. The man just at an anthropological level, the man is not going to be committed, necessarily going to be committed to that woman if there's no, if there's no issue from the act.
Yeah.
I remember an interview with Pat Buchanan and Norman Mailer, of all people, that may have been in the Atlantic almost as many as 20 years ago, in which Norman Mailer, whom we don't think of as a man of faith, observed that he completely understood the church's teaching on contraception because he said, well, if there's no chance, at least, of a child of issue, then, you know, what's the point?
Well, and what's the woman telling the man?
Right.
I take the pill because I don't want from you the best thing you could actually give me.
Right.
As a woman, I don't want that. Yeah. And that's like
exactly
it's a masculine.
And the diabolical thing about it is that so many goods have been achieved for women in recent years, like studying at universities that used to not allow women. I mean, it's kind of comical almost in a way, like. Oh, I don't know, voting. That was only 100 years ago, that kind of thing. There's many goods, but they have created an economic situation in which a woman who says, you know, I want to be the mom of lots of kids. It's very difficult for her because, first of all, where's she going to find a man who's going to say, yeah, me too. Let's do that. You and I will do that. And two, how's she going to afford housing anymore? Because all the housing prices are up because everybody's got two jobs in the family. Everything.
That was all planned. It was deliberate.
I only say that because I don't.
Oh, sure. To
I don't
get want, women in, into the workforce.
Right. But I don't want people to feel like maybe that we're, you know, when you say that about the woman doesn't want from the man the very best. Maybe in her heart she does want that. But she's really beaten
in economic
down
circumstances that
by the way society
right,
is now.
Right, there's the definite truth to that.
I think, Si, that in the case, and I don't know, I'm not a woman, and
you would be the worst woman.
I have limited experience, but I do think that women, you know, how's the old adage go? Women have sex for love, or they're hoping that at the end of this that they are going to
be loved.
Yeah.
I think we all want to be loved.
We do indeed. But
had
I can,
to give it.
I can hear the music, so we better ask you for your blessing, Father.
Benedictio Dei Omnipotentis, Patris et Filius Spiritus Sancti, descendet sub vos et maniat semper.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much, Chris Check, our president.
Always a pleasure.
Felt like
Si.
We could have done two more hours. Thank you very much, Father Hugh Barber.
You're welcome.
Jesus Christ is the light of the nations, and we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.